Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Good evening. You are listening to Love Sport Radio. Me, Matt Beadle, with you through to 11 p.m. this evening. Right now, on our Friday night fan show special, it's time, as you might be able to tell from the music that you are hearing, for the Leeds United fan show. Yes, indeed it is. Me, Matt Beadle, as I said, with John McKenzie from All Stats, aren't we?
Yo, yo, yo.
Yo, yo, yo. That is what we's talking about, yeah? Yo, yo, yo. Down with the kids, me and you, mate. I tell you what. By the way, before we get onto anything, there is a championship fixture happening right now at Craven Cottage. Fulham are currently 1-0 down at home to QPR. West Ham's finest, Jordan Hugill, has put the hoops in front. He's actually very nearly made it 2-0 as well. So as things stand, QPR winning at Craven Cottage this evening, 1-0. Almost got a second right there as well. But this is the Leeds United fan show, and there wasn't a game last week, so we're not going to reflect on something that didn't happen. Instead, we're going to look ahead at things about to happen. Of course, Luton Town and Reading coming up this week. But first, as always, the opening stats.
Yeah, the opening stat. So we usually do Leeds United stat. This is an indirect Leeds United stat. So last season, you'll remember Izzy Brown. He was on loan from Chelsea at Leeds. He played 23 minutes for Leeds United and concluded his Leeds career with that free kick in the playoff semi-final against Derby County, which sailed over the bar towards the end of the game in one of the few chances he had in his whole time at Leeds. This season, he is playing for Luton Town, our
indeed he is,
tomorrow, and he's got the second highest assists per 90 in the league with 0.47 for Luton.
Wow. The second highest assists.
Mm-hmm. He's per 90.
He's top of one particular chart, though, isn't he?
Yes.
Sorry, mate. I'm just trying to catch up.
You always
up.
Throw me in I these know. Things.
No, there is one. I did read this stat earlier, and I didn't tell you this before, which I probably should have done. I actually thought it might have been the opening stat. But yes, you are correct in the assists stat. In terms of chances created per 90, yeah, he's top 4.0.
Okay.
With Nicholas Eliasson of Bristol City as well. But that's not a very good stat. Your one's better. And Marcelo Bielsa has actually come out this week, hasn't he, and spoken about Izzy Brown and why it didn't quite work. I mean, ultimately due to injuries, right? He was hampered with injury issues.
Yeah, we took him on and he already had an injury. I think the agreement was that there was some kind of agreement whereby he wasn't going to get paid his full wage by Leeds until he was fit again. And it just took a long time, dragged on. We saw him play a few times for the under-23s, but at the end of the day, he was never fit enough to appear for us in any sort of adequate sense. So whether or not the recent run of form that he's having at Luton Town is in some way due to that time he spent at Leeds, I don't know, but it's good to see him doing well.
Yeah, he's doing well. He's one you can never be quite too sure about, right? He's one of those Chelsea loanees that comes out and you don't quite know whether he's going to perform. Like you said, I think everybody thought he was going to perform at Leeds. He is doing it for Luton Town. The jury's still out for me. I still think I'm not 100% sure whether he's definitely going to produce the goods consistently. I think that Championship is maybe his level. I think stepping up to the Premier League would be difficult.
Yeah, it'd be interesting because he obviously had a really good time with Huddersfield Town in their promotion season as well. And he looked very dangerous in that season. So I do think that he's definitely got the potential. Whether or not his level is the Championship, I wouldn't like to say. But so much of this is to do with systems and working in teams. One of the things I actually did this week on our Twitter feed was I did a tactics thread looking at the way that Luton Town play. Actually, Luton Town play style of football actually really is really quite compatible with the way that Leeds play as well. They play a 4-4-2 with a midfield diamond, which is quite flexible and allows them to shift into a back three if they want to. And I wonder whether or not Izzy Brown has fitted in quite well there, simply because that sort of flexibility is needed within a Bielsa system as well.
Interesting. Well, it is five games unbeaten, and it was five games unbeaten prior to the international break. It seems like it's taken an eternity for football to come back around again. Of course, football has been played. Yes, we know it was the international break, but it seems like it's taken ages for club football to return. It is back. And Bielsa spoke about this in his press conferences as well, and said that he wasn't entirely sure whether it was a good thing or a bad thing. What's your take?
On the international break.
On the break, yeah, and the fact that maybe the team might have lost a bit of momentum.
Yeah, I do think we were going really nicely. We talked about it on the show last time. Was it last week? I think we talked a little bit about how we'd sort of had easy wins. We'd eased through games and got wins, and it was just quite nice and comfortable, and it felt as though a lot of the sort of narrative arc issues that we all seem to be talking about weren't really there. You know, Eddie Nketiah had been injured, so Patrick Bamford was sort of allowed to just be Patrick Bamford and play, and it worked out quite nicely. So in that respect, it was not so much momentum, I think, as sort of there had been nothing happening that was negative, and it was quite nice having that that go on. But yeah, we've had some good things happen over the international break. I'm sure we're going to talk about Pablo Hernandez's contract. So all in all, I think good things have tended to happen in this international break, and there could have been worse things that had happened. So I think as long as they can come out against Luton and get what I think most people would consider a routine win, then we're back at where we were, and the momentum thing isn't really an issue.
Yeah, it's those routine wins, isn't it? You kind of want one of those. I think that would be the ideal performance this weekend. You mentioned Pablo Hernandez there as well. 2022, he's extended his contract to. It's an interesting one, this, because as I said to you before we came on air, he'll be 37 by the time that contract is up.
Yeah, ancient, hey, 37.
In footballing terms, it is. Listen, I'd like to think that you and I could still get up and down a football pitch, but at the highest level, at the position that he plays as well.
Yeah, I think there's no real danger, I think, with this contract. Leeds fans know how important Pablo Hernandez has been for them, and also how important his loss has been for us recently. So I don't think there's anyone who really is I'm sure there are people who are questioning the length of the contract, but he's a great player to have around. He's a great experience to have around, and he remains at whatever he must be now. What, 20, 30?
What, his age four? Now?
Yeah,
he's 34? 34 now.
Yeah. He remains at 34, one of our most creative outlets. And I think it's good to have him around. I would happily have him seeing his contract out, even if we then have to, as time goes on, manage him quite carefully. But we've seen in the last few weeks the effect that not having Hernandez playing has on the team. And when your team has I think we do lack creativity in the sort of classic sense of the term. I know that Bielsa uses his system to be generative of chances, but it's nice to have someone who is classically creative, who can take a pass that will just turn the game on its head and put someone through, and then they'll be up front. So I can't really see any cons really here. Yeah, sure, he's getting old, but at the moment he's still producing in a way that even at 34, and obviously not being as young as he used to be, is still useful in the Championship. So yeah.
Yeah, it's timing of it is interesting as well, and that is going to be something that the club, I suppose, have to look at next summer as well. A few players out of contract, right? So Meslier, I think, is out of contract. Obviously, you've got options on him.
Meslier's on loan, so yeah, he's going back. Yeah,
yeah, but yeah. You've got an option to buy, yeah, potentially, yeah, with Meslier, haven't you? Costa, we know, that's going to be made permanent next summer. Jack Harrison, loan with an option to buy. So there's plenty going on, of course, in terms of players who are going to be out of contract in the summer.
Yeah, we're going to lose Ben White as well.
Exactly.
Importantly, yeah.
Jack Clark, of course, we mentioned last week as well.
Yeah.
Always comes up.
Yeah.
Huffer, Coyle, Berardi.
Yeah. I mean, we're getting...
That's what I mean.
Yeah, we're getting towards that sort of level. It will be interesting to see what they do in the summer, because we've had loads of questions in the last few weeks on the show about the January transfer window, which I just think is such a non-issue, because I don't think... There's not going to be the money to spend, and also Bielsa, I don't think, will want to spend it, because the system for him is something that is important, and you can't just buy someone in January and expect them to make a huge amount of difference between then and the end of the season. So I do think that the thinking about the summer window is actually going to be quite an interesting thing to do, because I mean, a lot of it is riding on whether or not we go up or not, but there are huge changes that need to be made. There are going to be huge holes in the team in various places. So I think, again, tying that back to Pablo, it's nice to know there's a player there who works, likes the city, likes the team, works well with Bielsa. It's just nice to have that tied up now rather than have to worry about it in the summer.
Yeah, which you didn't have to do.
Yeah.
It's good. Get it done early doors. Just to finish on this opening section, talk to me about Adam Forshaw and this mystery illness. Now, we spoke a couple of weeks ago about this. Was that Luke Ayling or was that Adam Forshaw that we were speaking about last time?
Yeah, Luke Elling was the one who had that mystery illness.
His girlfriend was walking in. Right.
Adam Forshaw has a mystery injury, like that no one really knows what's going on with it. So it was he came on in midway through the Charlton game. So you remember we lost to Charlton. Mm-hmm. It was a bit of a disaster game in the first half. He brought on Forshaw in order to sort of solid things up and try and get us back to the sort of solidity and control we'd had in the games before then. And then after that, Forshaw sort of disappeared. He clearly been brought back too soon from his previous injury. And there's been various things that have happened since then. So he went on the Talking Shop podcast that we had Gary Davenport on from the other week. And as far as they were aware, you know, he was hoping to be back around the time of the Blackburn Rovers game, which was before the international break. Mm. And it came out in this press conference again that there's still no time really on Forshaw's return. So no one really knows what's happened with him. And obviously, as soon as something like that happens where the assumption is, oh, it'll be a couple of weeks, and then it drags on, becomes a month, becomes 6 weeks. When that kind of thing happens, the fan base are always going to get a little bit conspiratorial. But I have no idea what it is. Adam Forshaw has been a player who has had injury problems while we've had him. Mm. I don't need to say my opinion on Adam Forshaw is well known around here, but it's just a shame to we are quite thin on the ground in the central midfield areas. We don't really have a replacement for Calvin Phillips. You're looking at players like Alfie McCalmont, who is a great player but is very young, and then once you talk about Forshaw, you've got Forshaw Click, and then Tyler Roberts maybe played in the middle, or Pablo Hernandez, but that's tweaking the system around a lot as well. So a little bit of a worry. It'd be nice to have him available, because it would be quite nice to have him as an option, let alone as an important player. So.
Yeah, and I think there's always a concern as soon as a club isn't letting you know the details. Fine, don't let us know the time that player will be out. And from working within football clubs, that's always been a big thing from the physio or the club doctor. Don't say on the website, don't put it out in press that he's going to be back in 2 weeks or expecting 6 weeks. Just leave it open.
Yeah.
But they'll let you know the extent of the injury, or at least what the injury is. The fact that this isn't being said, I think, for no reason whatsoever, there's no reason for them not to let us know what the problem is with Forshaw. Mm. That, I do believe, is a slight concern. Anyway, I'm sure we'll talk about that plenty more. There is a score update at Craven Cottage as well. Fulham have equalised against QPR.
It was Abubakar Kamara.
Yeah. Crikey. Can you believe he scored a goal yet again? Okay. Leeds United fan show on Love Sport. Plenty more coming up.
Love Sport Radio, the station giving fans a voice.
It's the Leeds United fan show on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, here with John McKenzie from All Stats, aren't we? And our producer, Paddy, as well, who's waving at me from the window, as he always does. The happiest man in the world is Paddy. Just a quick update from the game at Craven Cottage this evening in the Championship. Fulham 1, QPR 1. Jordan Cugill putting the visitors ahead, but Abubakar Kamara equalising for the Cottagers. Right, we are moving on now to Graeme Smith, chief football writer at the Yorkshire Evening Post. Graeme, great to have you on the line. And I think the first question I'm going to ask you is the one that we finished the last segment with, and that is Adam Forshaw. Do you know more than we do with regards to the extent of the injury, this mystery injury that he seems to have?
No, I think details have been kept fairly vague, but I don't get the sense that there's anything sinister in that or any kind of play at work here. I think that, as Bielsa said, it's a niggling injury that is difficult to heal. I think he's probably had a couple of little setbacks, you know, where he thought, right, here we go, ready to get back into full training, and then has felt it again, and it just hasn't quite gone away. I think what Leeds will be hoping is that if they treat it carefully and treat him sensibly, then they'll be able to avoid, you know, the worst possible case scenario, which would be surgery and losing him for any great length of time. But of course, he's been out for a good while now. It's funny to say that a player has been missed when Leeds are in the kind of form they are, but I think he has. I think he's a big miss for the squad.
Hi, Graeme. It's John. We were also talking about Pablo Hernandez's new contract, and there's been a few people on our account, Twitter account this week, just saying that they think that, you know, that he is, I mean, 37 years old by the end of the contract. What do you feel about that? Is this an important contract extension for Leeds?
Yeah, I think so, because with Pablo Hernandez, you know exactly how good he is and what he can do, and he's a player that can and will produce moments of magic. And yes, you can look at his age, but I've seen no signs of him slowing down this season. Yes, he's had a little bit of an injury, and he got a kick as well, which is, that's not really down to age, that's just an impact injury, I think. But when he's committing to the press and when he's getting on the ball in the last couple of games, he still looks fresh to me. They're going to have to manage him right, of course, and you cannot go on forever, not with the intensity that Bielsa plays at Leeds. But I also think sometimes we look too deeply into the length of contracts. Players can be moved if you know it becomes necessary. But I think he's got the quality that, you know, he could contribute next season if they're in the Championship, obviously. And if they went into the Premier League, as is their hope, I think he could probably contribute there as well.
Mm. And in terms of any other business then, in terms of Kiko Casilla, has there been any more news about him this week? Is there any expectation about how things are going to progress with him?
No, I don't think really it would be appropriate or helpful to speculate on how it will go. There hasn't really been an update. We know that he has until the 27th to respond. There wasn't really adequate time for Leeds and Kiko Casilla to process the evidence and put together their case, and they were granted extra time. What we know is that he strenuously denies it, which means they're going to fight it, which probably means, because of the FA's standard of proof for such a case, that it's going to be a messy one. Regardless of the way it, you know, ends, there will be somebody unhappy. And it will probably rumble on for quite some time yet. But I think the longer it goes without a resolution is possibly in Leeds United's favour, because the closer it brings them to January and the possibility of bringing in an emergency loan. I would be surprised if they went with Meslier or Mierzak. I think it would probably be someone with a bit more experience brought in. But I have been surprised before by Bielsa.
There's been rumours, hasn't there, of David Stockdale potentially being one of those transfer targets in January. And Graeme, just aside from the Kiko Casilla stuff, like you said, that's setting up to be quite a messy situation. Aside from that, if we look at recent results and, of course, the routine win against QPR, the win against Blackburn, before that, of course, the goalless draw with Sheffield Wednesday, we've had the international break. But now everything that I tend to read about Leeds in the press, written by your fine self and others that report on Leeds, is that at the moment, it all seems quite matter-of-fact. Is that fair to say? We're just sort of kicking on, we're trusting the process and looking forward to the next game.
Well, yeah, they are. You don't want to say going under the radar because it's Leeds United and they don't really do under the radar. But they are quietly going about their business as much as they can. They're not blowing teams away in terms of scoreline, which means that I suppose nobody around the country is going to look at their results and think, oh, you know, Leeds are going to run away with it. You know, they have been fairly tight games, but they've had so much control in some of those wins that they were routine against QPR. QPR offered very, very little indeed. They've offered more tonight in the first half against Fulham than they did in the entirety of the game at Elland Road. I think Leeds can be quite satisfied with where they are right now. They've had key players missing. They've still been ticking along and getting results. They've not been scoring a lot of goals. They've not been taking all their chances. They've still been getting results. So I think if you're a Leeds fan, you can have few complaints right now.
And it's quite an important period as well, and run up to Christmas. There's a double game week this week and then a week off, as it were, the week after, but then another double game week after that too. So do you see this as being quite an important couple of weeks for Leeds' title ambitions?
I think it's just been an important part of any season. You know, when there isn't that break in December and it is going to be hectic between now and the new year. Was it 10 games in 6 weeks, something like that? So this is where the squad's going to be really important. And if he had everyone available, that, you know, I think he's got big selection headaches because there's a lot of options, but it's just keeping them all fit. And I know he doesn't really tend to go in for squad rotation, and he likes to trust his small band of players, but I'll be just interested in how players who have been injured or players who are a little bit older are managed during this period. I'm not sure we'll see the likes of Pablo play every single one of these games, for instance.
Yeah, no, very much indeed. It's that stage of the season, isn't it, as John said, that he's going to have to squad rotate. And just very quickly before you go, Graham, I know you alluded to it, but January, what are you thinking? Are you expecting a bit of activity? I mean, yes, there's loads of speculation. Yes, it might be on the goalkeeper front. Anywhere else at all?
I don't see a lot happening, to be honest with you. If you go back and look at Victor Orta's last, you know, half a dozen interviews, probably even further back than that, I almost think he's been telling everyone without telling them expressly that Leeds simply aren't interested in doing lots of business in January. He doesn't believe that January signings are particularly successful. I think he quoted only 25% are successful. I'm not sure how he's quantified that, but but he doesn't hold a lot of stock in this transfer window, and it's for obvious reasons that the amount of players that are available and the quality of the players that are available is not the same as it is in the summer. So I would imagine that unless Leeds run into some serious bother with player availability, I can't imagine a lot being done. I think there's always the potential for Clark to go back because it's not really working out for him. He's not playing any football at Leeds, so that could be one that moves out, which may mean they want to bring a winger in so that Bielsa has the amount of wide options that he likes to have. But like I said, unless something goes seriously awry, I wouldn't foresee a lot of transfer activity in January.
Top stuff, Graham. Thanks for joining us.
No problem.
That was Graham Smythe, chief football writer at the Yorkshire Evening Post. Graham Smith, I should say. Sorry, Graham. Interesting stuff there from Graham, as always, John, especially on the Kiko stuff. It's probably best not to speculate, he said. But the news is, of course, that the appeal was supposed to be in at the beginning of November. That's now been extended to the 27th, just a few days away.
Yeah, I think he's right in saying that they are going to try and drag it out as close to January as they can, just to give them the option of a replacement. But I don't know, it's an unsavoury situation, isn't it, really? And it's like he said, it's hard to see anyone coming out well from this, and everyone is going to be annoyed Someone's going to be annoyed on one side or the other, regardless of what the decision is eventually made. Because you are essentially just going down on the evidence of lip readers and video evidence and things like that, and that's the easiest sort of evidence to question. So expect a messy situation with that one, I think.
Okay, well, this is the Leeds United fan show on Love Sport. Next up, we've got a bit of opposition view, of course, Leeds facing Luton at the weekend and then Reading in midweek. We'll be speaking to fans from both of those clubs.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Opposition View on Love Sport.
It's the Leeds United fan show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with John McKenzie from All Stats, aren't we? An absolute thriller, by the way, going on at Craven Cottage at the moment. End-to-end action between Fulham and QPR. QPR took the lead through Jordan Hugill and Fulham equalised through Abubakar Kamara. But both teams have gone close to taking the lead since. Exciting stuff between Fulham and QPR. We will continue to give updates on that as the night progresses.
But should we just watch the game
should
now.
Just do commentary. Yeah.
I don't think I'd be very good at commentary. I think you'd be brilliant at it, but I don't think I'd be.
Thank you, Joe. It's very nice of you to say.
Yeah, I'd just say trust the process, and that would be it. That would be my punditry.
Of course, which Leeds are doing at the moment under Marcelo Bielsa, and they travel to Kenilworth Road on Saturday to face Luton. Intriguing contest, this one, I think. Luton not particularly doing very well against Leeds. Won one of their last 9 league matches against Leeds. And that also included that 5-1 hammering of 2006. So not the happiest team to play against Leeds United for Luton. But we've got George Osborne on the line now. George, how do you see this one going at the weekend?
Well, thanks very much for having me on. I don't really have a huge amount of confidence that Luton will be walking away with a positive result this weekend. I mean, you're saying that they've not got a particularly good record against Leeds. Well, it's 4 defeats on the bounce for us at the moment, which is their worst run of form since 2015. So I'm not expecting us to come out of this with anything, but you never know.
You do never know. No, it's a very good point to raise. And like you said, yes, not one in the last 4. However, if we're talking fours, Leeds haven't won in their last 4 away matches in the Championship, George. So, you know, a crumb of comfort for you.
Exactly. Something to cling on to as well. And I think the other thing to cling on to as well for a lot of Luton Town fans is the fact that we're simply in the Championship is the most magnificent, wonderful thing that we could possibly imagine. You know, it was 10 years ago, essentially, when we were in the conference, when our squad, you know, it was the match day programmes, the pre-season friendlies, where we only had 4 or 5 named players and everyone else was named trialist. So to have come from that point to this point within a decade, I think most fans are sort of relatively pleased to have a season that they're considering a bit of a free hit.
Hi George, it's John. One of the things that I think is really interesting about Luton is the fact that they've carried on playing the way that they were playing last season when they came up from League One. How do you feel about that? Do you think that's in hindsight is that necessarily a good thing, or do you think that they might have been benefited by tweaking the system somewhat?
It's a really good question. I mean, in terms of the system, it's important to remember it wasn't just the system that was used last season, but it was also the same system that was used back in League Two to get the initial promotion out of there as well. And I think that system evolved quite organically as a result, specifically as well as the squad that Nathan Jones built up. And what really worked in that squad was there was a really interesting blend in the midfield where you had Elliot Lee as an attacking focal point, Shinny as a playmaker, you had Pelly Ruddock, who's a really interesting sort of hybrid player, sort of a ball winner, shuttler, and a good defensive midfielder. And we had alongside that two excellent fullbacks, especially last season, Jack Stacey and James Justin. And so I think that the kind of the diamond system we played, it really did allow us to dominate the play, and with the fullbacks, we managed to get the width we needed in key areas to go and push on. But because we weren't able to replace Stacey and Justin when they moved up to, not just, you know, when we got promoted, we thought they might move on to Championship clubs, but both got picked up by Premier League sides. We simply weren't able to replace them with players of the same quality. And I think now it's becoming increasingly clear that the system that we used to get ourselves to this position perhaps didn't work as well when we haven't got those Premier League quality fullbacks sitting in a side that is essentially League One or lower Championship level.
One of the things I found really interesting about the system, though, is that there is so much flexibility in that system. So I watched the game against Reading before the international break in prep for a tactics study that I was doing, and really fascinating to see Martin Craney dropping in between the two centre-backs and basically playing as a back three there. And it actually reminds me a lot of the sort of stuff that Bielsa does with his system, where you can have your midfielder dropping in, forming a back three if you're playing against a strike partnership. I think potentially that this could be an interesting game just on that front, that it's very hard to actually read what Luton are going to do, because Leeds will probably change things up for this. They'll probably, because you play two strikers, will probably play a back three. And I have no idea how Marcelo Bielsa is going to counteract that. So do you have any thoughts on that in general?
I think it's a really interesting point as well. I mean, I think what I would say my point of concern with looking at Leeds is we're happy playing the ball out to the back. And I think last season as well, you know, I think we managed to find a really good balance, especially with the support of those two fullbacks to give ourselves those proper outpulls. But what's happened this year is, I mean, in goal, we've obviously had a problem is that our record signing, Sam Sluga, the Croatian goalkeeper, he's been dropped in recent weeks as a result of a number of errors. And I think just in general, we've made quite a few mistakes in open play when we've been playing the ball out the back. And I look at Leeds and I think about the extent to which a Bielsa side presses hard, you know, and essentially could try and stop things at source. And I think that is a real cause of concern. But then, you know, I think as well, your point about the fluidity is a really good one. You know, there were times, especially last season, I think there was this purple patch between about October and into sort of early January, where Luton were playing genuinely impressive football for the level that they were at. You know, I had to sit there and kind of remind myself that this was a League One side. And it was due to, especially I think, that interplay within the midfield, shifting around there. And I think the forward line as well. So, you know, in terms of the way Luton set up, so they always had that attacking midfielder at the point of the diamond. But they also had, in terms of the two centre-forwards, you had James Collins, who's a very hard-working, very industrious professional centre-forward who operates in traditional mould. But he was always partnered with a winger. So Harry Cornick, who's joint top scorer this season, actually came from Bournemouth as a winger, but has been converted into a striker. So it, as a result of that, that's led to, you know, especially when we talk about the front line, a little bit of extra stretching the play there. And that's just opened up some extra space for the midfield to move into. So, I mean, Luton are a really interesting side and they're definitely worth a watch. You know, I think it may just be a case that after, you know, back-to-back promotions and a few key players being picked off, that we might not quite be able to make the grade at this level fully. But I don't think there's a huge amount of shame in that, especially considering we're still playing entertaining football. You know, 22 goals this season so far. Too bad. Shame about the 30 we've conceded.
Well, it's interesting that, isn't it, George? Because you mentioned Sluga there as well, and the fact that he was a record signing for the club, which took a long time, by the way. I think Lars Elstrup was the one before him. That's late 80s, so it's taken a heck of a long time to bring someone in from foreign shores for that money. And James Shea had obviously been very, very good for Luton. Got the joint golden gloves with Adam Davies that season in League One last season. Adam Davies, of course, going on to Stoke and it not working out for him there. But Shea has been brought back in and kept a clean sheet in that first game against Bristol City. It's not gone so well since then. So it's going to be really interesting to see what Graham Jones does with regards to the goalkeeping situation at the club. We've got to move on. I actually really want to speak to you about that situation, but we do have to move on. And before you go, George, just a quick score prediction from you.
Oh, I'm
going to
go for
2-1 Leeds. 2-1 to Leeds United. George Osborne, thanks very much for joining us.
No, thanks very much for having me on.
Lovely stuff. Okay, 2-1 he reckons there, John. We're going to move straight on to Matt Lawrence, co-founder of KT Insights. I got confused there, Matt, because is that supposed to be Market Insights?
That is Market, yes.
Yeah, I did say this to John. See, I understand this. I'm down with it. I get that, you know, we don't use vowels anymore and we pretty much just say what it is. But Market Insights, brilliant. Yes. Matt, great to have you on. Of course, it is Leeds United Reading during the week. Games coming thick and fast now. Bit of an upturn slightly in fortunes for Reading since Mark Bowen took that job in rather controversial circumstances, I should say. What's the feeling towards him now amongst fans?
Well, like you say, it was a rather controversial appointment, moving from upstairs to downstairs, which is kind of the opposite way of most movements within the club or within club structures. But I was kind of sceptical to start with. It's a manager coming in who's been number two to Mark Hughes throughout his career, but he's picked up 10 points from the last 12 available, unbeaten in the last four. There's very little that Reading fans can moan about at the moment. He's made us look a lot more solid. We're getting the ball into good areas. One interesting switch that he has made is just the flipping of Swift and Ajaria. So Swift is now sitting deeper and orchestrating from a deeper area. And Ajaria, using his kind of ability on the ball, ability to beat players 1v1 in the final third as well. So overall, it's been a really, really promising start from Mark Bowen so far.
Mm. You've been playing 3-5-2. Almost in every game this season, with a back three with players like Matt Miazga and Liam Moore in that. How do you feel about the 3-5-2? Do you think it's the best formation that Reading can field a team in?
Yeah, I think it's been a recruitment drive in terms of wanting the 3-5-2. We switched to it a little bit towards the end of last season, and then over the summer we've pretty much removed most of the senior wingers from our squad to the point where Gareth McCleary really is the only one on the books at the moment who you could call a senior professional winger. We've got Michael Olise sat on the bench, as well as Josh Barrett, who's had stints when we have played four at the back. But we do have quality in the fullback, in the wingback areas as well, with Andy Iedom on the right. And we've kind of sport for choice at the moment with Omar Richards on the left and Jordan Obita coming back from 2 years of injury as well. So we are rather blessed in that department in terms of being able to have players that can go both ways up and down the pitch. Mm. I think the three at the back as well gives us a lot more solidity. One thing that I would say has been easy to do to Reading is you can almost, teams will turn up at the Medeski and kind of outrun us and just almost bully us at home. Is a really frustrating thing as a fan. But one thing that Bowen's done is made us a bit nastier as well. And that three at the back and the personnel there have gone some way to doing that, with the likes of Miazga, very good in the air, very dominant. Mm. And Michael Morrison, a bit more old school, head it, kick it defender. Yeah. And that's not meant as a...
Nothing wrong with that, Matt.
Nothing wrong with that at all.
I think we get...
But it's what we've been crying out for years. We've been sport with ball players like Thiago Lloris, but then at times would just get bullied and pinned by his man for 90 minutes, and you can't win games of football in the Championship if that's happening to you, and he's resolved a problem.
Talk to us about John Swift. John Swift is one of my favourite players in the Championship at the moment. As you mentioned, there's been that tweak with him and Nigeria. Do you see him as being maybe a deeper lying centre midfielder?
This is a conversation I've been having with some friends of mine as well regarding Reading. I was initially, at the start of the season, I was very keen on having him in the 10 because I do like him in the final third, playing those little through balls that he's able to do. There aren't many more creative, and his passing range at this level is just outrageous.
Yeah.
There was a pass the other day against Luton where he just kind of stood on the ball, swiveled outside of the foot, and I was just... It was absolutely ridiculous level of technique as well. But the big conversation is Ajaria as well. Are we then negating his strengths in sort of those 1v1 areas in the final third? Because he does have that ability to get out of spaces that it doesn't quite look possible to get out of. And then you've got overloads as a result of that.
Matt, before you go, mate, just quickly, we're going to get a score prediction from you, but I also want to ask you about George Puskás as well, someone that we haven't mentioned at great length, because this is someone that we all saw in the summer for the under-21s with Romania. Very, very impressive. I think some people were surprised that he came into the championship with Reading. It's a player that's, yes, he's still learning his craft, now scoring, of course, for the seniors as well. Just 23 years old, hasn't been prolific this season, you know, only 5 goals in all competitions for Reading. Actually, I think it's 4 goals in all competitions for Reading. So he's not been prolific, but is this a player you think that can really fulfil his potential and actually go on to be potentially a Premier League player?
He's definitely got the ability there and the potential. He's got a real knack for getting into the right areas. Often you moan about the bemoan strikers not having opportunities, but that's something you can't knock Puskás for. He's got this incredible knack of getting into positions. He's got a really high XG. I think he's in the top 10% of strikers within the championship for XG, but it's a similar sort of problem to you guys experiencing with Patrick Bamford in terms of just missing gilt-edged chances, and almost he just needs one to bounce in off his knee, for example, or his backside to go in. But he's got the ability in the 6-yard box where he really manages to create those sort of separations from central defenders to buy himself a couple of yards.
Yeah.
I think I'm of the essence of the numbers suggest he has become good at some point, much in the same way I'm sure you guys are with Bamford. If you keep getting into those areas, one of them's got to go in eventually.
Well, perhaps they'll both score in the middle of next week. Matt, before you go, a quick score prediction.
1-1, George Puskás and Patrick Bamford.
There we go. Lovely stuff. Cheers for coming on, Matt.
Have a good night, guys.
That was Matt Lawrence, co-founder of Market Nights, and this is the Leeds United Fan Show. Next up, it's listener questions.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
It's the Leeds United Fan Show on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, here with John McKenzie from All Stats, aren't we? It's time for listener questions now. But before we get there, we always have to chuck in a random quote from a random person who's been talking about Leeds United. We've got one this week, as always. This time, Ian Holloway.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know.
What did he say? Can you do it in his accent?
No, I can't. I don't want to offend anybody at all. He has said, I still think they've got the same issues. So, cheers. This is the best one. Eddie Nketiah is really young, but I do like him. And Patrick Bamford is Patrick Bamford.
It is true. You can't fault his logic there.
You can't. You cannot fault his logic. It was like Paul Potts. Remember Paul Potts?
The guy who won the singing competition.
He won Britain's Got Talent years ago, yeah. And he did an interview. I think it was in the build-up to the final. And he said, I finally realised, after all this time, I finally realised who I am. I'm Paul Potts. All right, mate. Crikey. It took you long enough. Right, okay. We are going to move on now to the listeners' questions. That's enough of Ian Holloway. And these are quite interesting. Inflexielsa is the first one. Question about Bielsa teams being too inflexible because the players seem to have such rigid tasks. I thought that this was a problem at the end of last season and start of this when, for example, against Wigan, we just kept on ploughing the same furrow without any joy. That's from LUFC Mildil.
Yeah, I'd say a couple of things to this. Firstly, I would say Bielsa isn't a lot happier to tweak the system now because I think he's happier with the team's ability to be able to tweak things around. So we've seen already this season quite a few different systems that we didn't see last season. Last season we saw basically 4-1-4-1 with the occasional Calvin Phillips dropping in between the two centre backs to make it a back three. This season we've seen a few different formations. We've seen the 3-3-1-3 a little bit more regularly, the famous 3-3-1-3 that Bielsa developed when he was in Argentina and used with Chile during the World Cup famously. We've also seen a 3-5-2, which we didn't see at all last season. So I think part of the reason why there's been more flexibility this time around is simply because Bielsa is happier with the players to be able to make those changes. The other thing I would say is that, and it's something that I've said a lot before, is that when you're playing against teams like Wigan who are sitting deep, I think that the assumption is that it's easy to break down low blocks, and we've constantly reminded the fans that that isn't the case. I think perhaps Leeds should have gone maybe a little bit more central against Wigan. It was a frustrating game. It was play the ball out wide, get it to Jack Harrison, and Jack Harrison fails to do a good cross, and actually the goal that we got in that game came from, or the best chance we got in that game came from Patrick Bamford basically going through the middle. But I don't think there's an issue there. I think actually Bielsa's been as flexible as I've ever seen him in his career this season at Leeds. So I think we'll be okay on that in that respect.
Okay. Speaking of crosses, that moves us on nicely to the next question. Phillips Corner. Now, this is great because we talk about stats a lot and we are delving very deep here. Crikey. Perhaps clutching on a few straws, I don't know. But Phillips Corner. We saw this week Phillips has the best corner accuracy stats. Didn't know they existed. So accuracy stats for corners.
Yeah, I think this is something Josh must have put out on the account. I hadn't seen it. So, okay. But I suspect that is. I don't know how you would measure that. You're probably measuring it based on whether or not it finds someone's head. So you know that doesn't necessarily mean it's a good corner if someone gets their head on it.
Well, it was actually a lot like Matt Jarvis of West Ham United. Remember, he was their record signing. I think they signed him from Wolves, didn't they? And for a couple of seasons in a row, he was like regarded as the Premier League's best crosser because he was just whipping balls in for fun. But they weren't always ending up in success. But he had the stats that were best for that. Right. Anyway, we digress. We saw this week Phillips has the best corner accuracy stats. Why don't we score more from corners? Is it just a fan perception that we're ineffective from set pieces? That's from Loop.
I don't think so. I don't think we've got particularly... Do we have a set of particularly good players in the air, really? There's not many players who I think, if they get the ball... on their head and they're free in the penalty area for a corner that they're going to score from. I think Liam Cooper is probably our best header of the ball, and even still I wouldn't be particularly positive about his heading all the time. It's not like when we had, I think, Carl Bartley and Pontus Janssen as a pairing in that Monk season, we scored loads of goals from corners because those two were just lethal from corners. We don't have players like that, really. And if you look at our midfield players, when you have players like Adam Forshaw, Pablo Hernandez, Mateus Klich isn't a particularly good header of the ball. I think that's the reason for it. We just don't have anyone who's a particularly good header of the ball.
Okay. Moving swiftly on, we're going to go to EFL silliness now, because this is an interesting one. That's obviously news come out this week that Bolton have had the fine released, but it's a suspended points deduction. What your thoughts on the EFL recently seem to be holding clubs to account? Are we seeing them heading in the right direction? The Bolton fine released today was a bit unfair, says Barney.
Yeah, with Bolton, we were chatting about this before we went on air. It just seems as though the EFL feel as though they've been backed into a corner where they have to punish clubs for going into receivership or going into financial difficulties, because if they don't do that, you're basically allowing clubs to run themselves into the ground. But as far as I'm aware, what happened this week is an independent organisation did some kind of arbitration for the EFL with regards Bolton, and recommended that no points deduction was given, and the EFL disagreed, and they've decided that there should be some kind of reparation made. As we were saying, it seems as though what's happening there is that Bolton being punished for someone else's mistakes, namely the previous owners. And I think the problem with that is that you risk being too draconian to the point where you actually cause Bolton more problems than they actually deserve. And whether if those financial fair play rules, or whatever, they're not called that in the Championship, but we know what we're talking about when we say that. If those rules are designed to prevent that kind of thing happening, then you also want to make sure that your implementation of those rules isn't equally problematic for the clubs that you're dealing with. So I think it was bad form from the EFL, but I think Leeds fans are all too aware of the inadequacies of the EFL. So I guess we're always going to take one side in that
dig,
sort of debate.
A little dig from John McKenzie there. Of course, you're Bolton now in positive equity for the first time this season. Just another 12 points and they're out of safety, providing MK Dons and AFC Wimbledon don't continue to pick up points. Last question, very quickly, we are going to go to the Preston Challenge. Preston, what's going on there, says Glows White. Should the Glows or Gloss? Glows, I'm going with.
Gloss. I think he's from Gloucester.
Oh, okay, Gloss White. I was thinking that he glowed white.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Okay, very quickly, should they be considered true automatic promotion challenges yet? He's added in some stats. Insane number of penalties so far. Goal scored seems a complete anomaly compared to their underlying stats.
Yeah, totally agree. Josh Hobbs, my co-host at All Stats On We, he gets quite annoyed by the amount of penalties that Preston get. In fact, he's told me so often now I can't even remember what they are, but they got something like 7 in 16 games or something. And if you went back in Leeds United's recent history to find out how many games it would take them to have the same number of penalties, it was something like 101 games. So they concede penalties at a higher rate than most teams. We put something out on our stats channel, and one of their fan sites responded and looked at each of these penalties and made sure that they were all fair. So
brilliant.
They may be more likely to get penalties. They're also scoring goals at a higher percentage than you would expect. So in the long run, I think it will be unlikely if they retain this sort of high level all the way through the season.
Lovely stuff. That was John McKenzie of All Stats Aren't We. We'll be back with the Leeds United fan show next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.